Welcome to the Red Zone.
The Red Zone. Red Zone.
With Soren Petro. An exclusive presentation of KCChiefs.com. For the next 60 minutes, this is your in-depth, inside look at the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, here's your host, Soren Petro.
Good afternoon and welcome. You're in the Red Zone here at KCChiefs.com. Soren Petro with you on a Wednesday. That is when we are live each and every Wednesday. Going to talk some safety today with Willie Donick, 104.5 The Zone in Nashville, Tennessee, a man who covered Eric Berry. We're going to talk about the Chiefs' first-round draft pick, get the opinion of a man who watched him in college, see what he thinks the Chiefs are getting with that number 5 overall pick. That coming up a little bit later on. Also, we'll talk about the offensive line with Chiefs center Casey Wiegman. Former chief, current chief. He is back in town, one of the real good guys in the National Football League, back as a member of the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll talk to Casey Wiegman coming up a little bit later here in the Red Zone. But we're going to start with some conversation about the safety position because we're going to hear a breakdown on Eric Berry from Willie Donick. Ed Reed, the guy that everybody has discussed in terms of who they would like to see Eric Berry become. And certainly you would love to see it happen. And I got to talking, I got to thinking about it. Let's take a look and see what is it that makes, what statistically, let's go into the numbers. And football, a lot translates into the numbers, but there's more to it. There's clearly the quote-unquote, what's become the popular way to phrase it, the eye test on it beyond that. But numerically, what makes Ed Reed stand out as the guy you want to compare him to? I took four safeties because we've discussed the top 10. Ed Reed is not a top 10 safety, nor is Troy Polamalu, but they're considered the two best safeties in the game. Roy Williams was a top 10 draft pick at the safety spot, played with the Cowboys. And I was even surprised to look it up and find that he had played in 5 Pro Bowls. Not necessarily. I think some people think his career hasn't lived up to the expectations, but early on, certainly had the respect of those when it came to Pro Bowl voting, 5 Pro Bowls. And Dante Whitner, who's had 4 years in the league after being a top 10 pick, number 8 overall 4 years ago, by the Buffalo Bills, and say, all right, let's take a look at their numbers and just see how they compare. And I took out injury seasons like 2009 for Troy Polamalu, so not to water down the numbers. If a guy missed predominantly the entire season, and Polamalu played in 5 games, but really only played in a couple, tried to limp through several other games, I took that out so his numbers weren't watered down on a year that he was hurt. But, you know, let's take a look and see what is it that makes these guys the standout safeties. Is it huge tackle totals? Are they guys that are just dominating because they get to the football and make tackles? Or is it something else? And a little bit surprising, I think, if you take a look at the numbers as far as tackles per season. Now, guys have missed some games in here, so it's not necessarily apples to apples. But I did the average tackles per season of 4 safeties, Roy Williams, Dante Whitner, Troy Polamalu, and Ed Reed. Just randomly, pick 4 safeties again, the 2 that are considered the best in the business, and then 2 more guys that were top 10 picks that maybe haven't lived up to the expectations that their organizations would have had. And who do you think had the highest tackle total? You'd think probably Troy Polamalu, with Ed Reed being a close second, but in reality, they're 3rd and 4th out of this group of 4. Roy Williams actually has the highest tackle total, 69 per season. 69, not 120, not 110, 69 tackles is his average, and I just took his years with the Dallas Cowboys, not the last couple of years where he hasn't played as much. Clearly, an indictment that physically teams don't think he can physically do the things they want him to do. But in his prime, after his draft selection, and for his first 6 years, he was averaging 69 tackles per season. That's the best of the 4. Dante Whitner, 57 tackles per season in his first 4 seasons. Troy Polamalu, 55 tackles per season, taking out last year where he had a very low number in his first 6 years. Ed Reed, for his career, is averaging 48 tackles per season. 48. So it's not in the tackle department where Ed Reed is dominating that has people saying, boy, Ed Reed's the best safety in the business. Now, it should be pointed out there's one season where he had only 10 games, but his games played in his career, 16, 16, 16, 10, 16, 16, 16, and 12. Last year, so he's only missed 10 football games over the course of his 8 years in the NFL. So that number, even if he would play those 10 games, that number's not going to be real high. It probably puts him into the mix with Troy Polamalu and Dante Whitner in the middle 50s. But if you're thinking that Eric Berry is going to come in and lead this team at 110, 115 tackles, probably not going to happen. It might happen here or there. There are some 100-tackle seasons in this list. Ed Reed has never had a 100-tackle season. In fact, the high for Ed Reed is 71. Now, again, we've said many times the tackle statistic is grossly overrated in football. You play on good defenses, you have a lot of three and outs. There are limited numbers of opportunities to get tackles, and that reflects with Ed Reed and it reflects with Troy Polamalu. Highest tackle season of Troy Polamalu's career, 74 tackles in 2005. By the way, I'm using ProFootballReference.com as my guiding light. All of these guys getting all of their numbers off Pro Football Reference just to compare apples to apples. There are other sites. There, you know, the tackle is not an official statistic. At least it wasn't at one point in the NFL, but different sites have different numbers. So I'm going with this apples to apples on profootballreference.com, pro-football-reference.com. But clearly, it's not the number of tackles that makes Ed Reed the best safety in the NFL. What is it then? Well, interceptions. I mean, you come down to it, that's the number. But maybe not to the degree you think. Ed Reed does lead these four in interceptions. He averages almost six interceptions per season. Not 10, not 12. I think a lot of people probably figure, hey, Ed Reed, that guy gets 10, 12 interceptions a year. No, in reality, he's never had 10 interceptions in a season. He's had nine on two occasions. Interception totals for his career, 5, 7, 9, 1, and that was the year he only played 10 games. 5, 7, 9, and last year, 3. Where he played 12 games. And it should be pointed out that Ed Reed is 47th on the all-time interception list with 46 total. Active Ed Reed, his 46 interceptions are good for a tie for third with Champ Bailey behind Ty Law's 53 and Darren Sharper, his 63 interceptions. So Ed Reed is the youngest. He and Champ Bailey are 31 years old, Ty Law 35 and Sharper 34. So he's got some time to pass both of those guys. But the interception totals, interceptions are the difference. He averages almost six per year at 5.8 in these seasons that we took. Roy Williams, 3.2. Troy Polamalu, 2.8. I think that would surprise some people. And Dante Whitner only has four interceptions in his 4 year. If we were to look at something and say, why do people think certain safeties are better than the other, I think interceptions is the defining mark. Troy Polamalu, for his career, rookie year, 0. 5, 2, 3, 0, 7, and then he actually had three last year in just the five games he played. But seven is the career high for Troy Polamalu. What do we take from that? Well, clearly the Steelers use him more in their defense. They attack more with that secondary, and Polamalu plays up in the box more. Not surprising that his tackle total is a little bit higher than Ed Reed's, and not surprising that he doesn't have as many interceptions because they do attack with him up front and make him that eighth man in the box a lot, which clearly prohibits his ability to go get the football. But if you saw the opener last year against the Tennessee Titans, he made a great interception in that game. He can cover. But interceptions, to me, are kind of the defining mark with Ed Reed, and even more are interceptions or fumble recoveries for big plays. Ed Reed, I think this is what makes Ed Reed, by most people's estimation, the best safety out there, and it's that he's turned turnovers into touchdowns eight different times. Six times in the interception category, two times in the fumbles, eight turnovers he has turned into touchdowns. So I think that's what defines him. Three for Roy Williams, only two touchdowns for Troy Polamalu, and one for Dante Whitner. So in our little study here of just taking four safeties, randomly picking what are arguably or considered to be the two best safeties, and then a couple more to figure out that were top 10 picks, what is the defining difference? Dante Whitner and Roy Williams get to the ball carrier as much or more than Ed Reed. Now, part of that may be a product of playing on lesser defenses, so there are simply more opportunities to get to the ball carrier. But what has defined Ed Reed's career is his ability to sniff out the football, be a ball hawk, get the interception, and then when he gets it, make big plays out of the interception. If Eric Berry is going to live up to the name Ed Reed, which people love to put next to him, interceptions and big plays when the football is in his hand is what is going to define him. If he comes out of the gate while the Chiefs are still rebuilding their defense and he doesn't have a ton of interceptions and he doesn't have a lot of big returns, don't panic, because I think it's clear the one thing we've talked about, there is a pretty good front seven in front of Ed Reed for his entire career. There's been a pretty good front seven in front of Troy Polamalu. The guys up front for Eric Berry to maximize his potential, the guys up front are going to have to get it done. They're going to have to pressure the quarterback, make the pass, get the ball out of his hand early so that maybe it's not the best pass in the world, and Eric Berry has a chance to use his natural athletic ability and instincts to break on footballs. But you give a quarterback all day, it's going to be difficult for anybody to really stand out and shine from that safety position. What defines Ed Reed? It's the INT. It's the big play after he gets the INT. He has a nose for making the big play. Eric Berry, does he have that nose? Well, he did at Tennessee. We'll talk more about that. Coming up next, Willie Donick from 104.5 The Zone in Nashville, Tennessee. He covered Eric Berry. He'll break down Eric Berry's game at Tennessee with us next here in the Red Zone.
Today's show is sponsored in part by Chiefs Ticket Exchange by Ticketmaster. The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
Real sports fans can tell you all about decibels. That a crowd yelling at 105 decibels is like a jackhammer. 120, a jet engine. That studies directly link team performance to crowd noise. Finally, they'll tell you to go to Ticketmaster, with more ways to get you into the game, including buying and selling seats from season ticket holders and other fans. Because for your voice to be heard, you have to be there. Ticketmaster. More ways in.
Buy and sell Chiefs tickets with Chiefs Ticket Exchange by Ticketmaster at kcchiefs.com.
Every Sunday, a city of more than 2 million unites. A community of fans thousands strong anticipates. A team of 53 players charges the field.
It's a sweep left to the fullback, and a great block springs him to the outside. He's up the left sideline.
And one grocery store is proud to support them all.
He's going to outrace everyone to the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs. The Kansas City Chiefs fan, they'll tailgate just about anywhere. And they live to hear the three most important words ever.
Tailgate Kansas City!
With Hy-Vee's weekly tailgate specials, you'll find everything you need for your next Chiefs tailgate or Chiefs party. Stop into Hy-Vee and stock up with new tailgate specials every week.
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs.
It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angle, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jamal Charles.
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job and we'll win this game. And the Chiefs put the hammer down.
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good. Ryan Suckup wins the game in overtime.
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to kcchiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul. Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on kcchiefs.com. Today's show is sponsored in part by Chiefs Ticket Exchange by Ticketmaster.
Welcome back here in the Red Zone here at kcchiefs.com. Soren Petro with you on a Wednesday. It's when we're live each and every Wednesday. Appreciate you joining us via the podcast and the archives, but you can catch us live every Wednesday, 3 o'clock Central Time, for those of you in the outlying areas of the Chiefs Kingdom. Right now we're going to talk to a man who has seen the college career of Eric Berry come and now go. Willie Donick, 104.5 The Zone in Nashville, Tennessee, is with us. Willie, how are you, sir?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
All right, let's talk about what the Chiefs got in Eric Berry. I know they were very excited. They love the character that he brings to the equation, but certainly they love the ability to make plays on the football field, something he did at a record-setting level at Tennessee. Take me back, if you can, to the first time you heard his name. Did it go back to high school when they were recruiting him? Was it when they got into their first August practices going into his freshman year? When was it that Eric Berry started to become a known commodity for the Vols fans?
Well, for the hardcore Vols fans, there's no question that they were excited about him when he came to school, for sure. But I think for most people that, you know, don't follow the recruiting part of it as much, he was pretty much an instant success. And I think he was marked down a pretty special player pretty much from the time he went in there and started playing. I think you knew you had something special from the moment he got on the field.
Do you remember, as I was reading up about his background, I mean, top player out of the state of Georgia, he was a quarterback and a corner in high school and just put up great numbers on both sides of the football and was a track guy, which is, you know, often the case for the guys that end up being high draft picks in the NFL. That's not uncommon. But do you remember what it was, why they eventually made the move with him? Not that he couldn't have played corner, but why he ended up settling in at safety and not corner?
Well, I think it had to do as much with the defensive system of then defensive coordinator John Chavis, who has now moved on. Once Philip Fulmer was replaced by Lane Kiffin, Chavis went to LSU. But John Chavis was there for a long time. And so Eric Berry, I think, fit in to his defense a lot better at safety. But, you know, in talking to a lot of people, and this is certainly the case, when Monty Kiffin took over that defense, they used him in a number of different roles. So I think he is not just a, you know, regular safety. He's a guy that can do just about anything. He can be a nickel guy going man-to-man against the receiver in the slot. He can play corner. You know, even, you know, in their defense, he even lined up as sort of a weak side linebacker at times, depending on the alignment of the offense.
Monty Kiffin, a 4-3 cover 2 type of guy. What was the style of defense he was playing before Monty Kiffin got there?
Well, you know, it's funny that if you ask the Vol fans, what they used to get on John Chavis for a lot is they were not aggressive enough, particularly late in games when they had the lead. A lot of people thought they played too soft in coverage, but that's why Eric Berry did so well in that defense. He was such a ball hawk, and he could make the moves on the ball so quickly. There, you know, just one time after another, he would make huge plays where, you know, he was, I think by the end of his sophomore year, he had almost set the NCAA record for interception return yardage. He had just had a ton of plays where he would make the pick and then run it a long way back, if not all the way.
The knock on him, if there is one, is that, you know, maybe he's not the surest tackler. Would you agree with that?
I don't know if I agree with that. I've seen him. There was a great play. He mixed it up with Tim Tebow down in Gainesville last fall. I think if you watch that play, he went head-to-head with, you know, Tebow was a huge guy, and he, you know, he wrapped him up, knocked him down pretty good. I would not say he's a weak tackler, but that's just me. I think you're really looking hard to try to find a weakness.
Yeah, I mean, everyone, you don't go number 5 unless you're a complete player. So we're splitting hairs, I'm sure. Tackling isn't just making the big hit. It's, you know, in the NFL, I mean, they're going to be elite athletes, not in the SEC is as elite as it gets, certainly as far as conferences go for college football. It's the best of the best from all conferences when you get to the NFL. Is he a guy that goes for that, you know, that Sports Center hit as opposed to making sure he wraps a guy up and brings him down?
Well, I don't think so. I think he's a smart player. I think that's the number one thing. The combination for him of understanding the game. There was a great article in Sports Illustrated you may have read before the draft about how it was the Buccaneers that got him in the film room in an interview situation and just hit him with all kinds of questions about the Tampa 2 and what do you do if this guy goes here. And they were just completely impressed with his ability to answer questions for the NFL defense. And obviously Monty Kiffin and his tutelage that one year he was with him went a long way there. But it's the combination of that, the instincts, the athleticism, and the fact that this guy has no baggage at all. This is a guy that would go in with the equipment guys and clean helmets with him. You see, because he wanted to be around him, you know, he would go and bring the video guys donuts because he was always hitting those guys up for film so he could watch the film. I mean, that's the kind of guy he is. He doesn't put himself above just the regular everyday guys in the operation of a football team. And I think that's what Kansas City really saw special in him, beyond just the great football skills.
no baggage, but high character. You know, is something that the Chiefs talked about all of their draft picks, and it started with Eric Berry. Those stories, we've heard those same stories you were talking about. I haven't heard the donut one, but we certainly heard the cleaning helmets story a number of times. Was this something that, you know, was always the case, or was there a turning point for him at Tennessee, or did he bring this to the table immediately?
You know, I can't say that I know him very well, but I would say that, you know, that's just something that I've always heard about him, that, you know, it wasn't any one thing that changed him or anything. It was just kind of his DNA, which is a good sign. And you mentioned, you know, those other guys, you know, from the SEC, a lot of people are familiar with, obviously, Javier Arenas from Alabama and Dexter McCluster from Ole Miss. And I think you're right, that common thread of they felt really good about these guys' character as well as their athleticism and their ability to flourish within an obviously very tough conference playing in the SEC. They think that that's going to translate well for Kansas City.
The front seven in front of them, I mean, Ed Reed's the guy everybody wants to compare Eric Berry to. You know, Troy Polamalu, another one of the great safeties in the NFL. People love to talk about how good they are. People rarely mention how good the front seven is, at least not in reference to, yeah, Eric Berry, Troy Polamalu, really good, but how about that front seven in front of them? But it's a fact. Great players in front of them on that front seven. Tennessee puts a lot of pros into the NFL. Over the last 3 years with Eric Berry becoming a star for the Vols, how good was the front seven in front of him?
Well, you know, you go back through the years, Tennessee has some pretty good players. Gerard Mayo was in there for a year or two with Eric Berry. Going back just last year, Dan Williams, first-round pick. So they've had some good front sevens. You know, in comparison to some of the great teams Tennessee has had, I don't think the front sevens were nearly as good as some of the teams that you go back to mid-90s, late-90s, early 2000s, when they were coming up with, you know, for example, John Henderson and Albert Haynesworth in the same defensive line. Not that level, but certainly pretty solid. And I think where Eric Berry, too, deserves a lot of credit, this past year they did not have the depth that they normally have. And they start guys injured late in the year, and Eric Berry, I think, was still very productive. I think that's probably going to serve him well.
And I'm not, you know, I don't expect you to be able to recall each of his games in your head, but against the bigger opponents, did he have some of his best days? It's not a case where, you know, statistically speaking, as far as his interceptions, tackles for a loss, the return yardage, as you mentioned, outstanding. Can you recall, you know, some of those plays, you know, maybe and certainly not all of them, but some of those plays being made against the big boys?
Well, I think what's difficult to quantify is the factor of when teams go into a game against Tennessee, you know, and this is where I think Monty Kiffin deserves a lot of credit. It was a lot harder to find where Eric Berry was going to be on the field. I think before Monty Kiffin got there, the attitude was, okay, we're not going to throw anything near Eric Berry. And even so, he still got his interceptions. He got his, you know, interception returns for big plays. But, you know, I wouldn't put too much emphasis on whether he did it against the big – and the answer is yes. He's made – I can't recall a whole lot of specifics right there. But I know this, that, you know, no coach tried to test him a whole lot. They did their best to stay away from him.
And then it shows. We're talking to Willie Donick, 104.5 The Zone in Nashville, Tennessee, about Eric Berry, the safety the Chiefs took with the number five overall pick. At the end of the day, at number five, you know, you think the Chiefs, most people would tell you that's pretty high for a safety. We chronicled it coming in. I think most people tell you they're very happy to get him. He was an immensely, let me say this first, an immensely popular draft pick at the Chiefs draft day party. The fans very excited. I know some of the folks up front chanting his name long before it ever came around. And when, you know, number four made their pick and he was still there, they were thrilled. So it was an immensely popular pick. One of the things, though, we've thrown out are some of the guys from, you know, Dante Whitner to and LaRon Landry, Roy Williams from Oklahoma, some of the top 10 safeties that have gone over the last decade or so, they have not played like Ed Reed. You feel pretty good that there is this guy is going to be one of those special players, more Ed Reed than, say, Roy Williams from Oklahoma.
You know, I do not pretend to be a talent evaluator in football, for sure. And I'll also come clean, I am not a Tennessee fan. I'm more of a Vanderbilt guy, so I am not going to sugarcoat anything about Eric Berry. But Eric Berry is not a regular safety. Like I said before, I think he can play some corner. Right, you know, here in Tennessee, we saw Michael Griffin, first-round draft pick out of Texas, who was a safety in college. They actually tried him at cornerback for a year, and, you know, then they moved him back to safety. And he did okay at corner. I think Eric Berry's got a little of that, but I think Eric Berry can go out and cover a guy man-to-man. If not on the outside, then definitely from the nickel spot in the slot. So these are skills that go outside of just your normal safety skills. So, you know, when you hear about, well, it's usually safeties aren't picked that high, a lot of times it's for that reason. But I think Eric Berry is not your normal safety, and number two, he's a guy that is going to play for a long, long time. I really feel good about how he's going to turn out as a pro if he stays healthy, of course.
All right, you mentioned the Titans right there in your backyard. The Chiefs and Titans will play this year in December. What type of expectations are there for the Titans this year?
Well, I think it's a big, big year for this regime. And when I say this regime, it's really Jeff Fisher that has taken the lead of pretty much everything that they do. Since they let Floyd Reese go, the general manager, Jeff Fisher has upped his influence quite a bit. Now, this team that they're going to have this coming year, they have, I think, rid themselves, for the most part, of a lot of the veteran leadership. They just felt like it was time to move forward, not so much because they weren't getting results on the field, but at this stage of these guys' particular careers, they didn't think it was worth bringing them back. And I'm talking about Kyle VandenBosch, Keith Bullock, Kevin Mawai, you know, some other guys, sort of that ilk, veteran guys. So I think it's very unknown, particularly on defense, what the identity is going to look like for this group. I would say on paper, I'm not sure I would go much past 8-8, 9-7 at this point. I'm not sure they have the dynamic playmakers on defense that they're looking for. Now, they drafted Derek Morgan, a defensive end out of Georgia Tech, with their first pick. You know, the X factor is if he can really help their pass rush, maybe they can get back to playing some pretty good defense. Their offense is very good, but probably not good enough to overcome what was a pretty average defense last year. It's hard to see the defense being that much better.
We spoke to some people in Washington, and of course Albert Haynesworth was a huge free agent purchase for that football team last year. People in Washington saying that, hey, I don't see it connecting between, this is the words of folks that cover the team, connecting between Mike Shanahan and Albert Haynesworth, and they don't expect Haynesworth to make it to training camp. He's staying away from all of their OTAs right now, and their speculation is, hey, Tennessee could be a destination spot for him. You know, that's Washington looking at what Tennessee would be interested in. Would Tennessee, in your mind, be interested in bringing Albert Haynesworth back?
I think under the right circumstances, yes, they would. We've talked about it a lot. I think Tennessee is laughing because they got this one right, I think, in their own minds. Now, going back a couple of years before he became a free agent, I think the attitude amongst the fans is, you're right now for having let him go based on the circumstances. But what they should have done is either continue to franchise tag him or they should have locked him up a year before he became a free agent. You could have gotten him at a more reasonable price. But given the circumstances where Washington paid a boatload of money for a guy that had motivational questions, I think what is happening now is exactly what the Titans thought was going to happen. But that being said, now that the Redskins have paid, what, $30, $32 million already, would the Titans take him back, you know, at 3 years at a reasonable rate, I don't know, $16 million or so? I think they would be willing to take that gamble for sure if they didn't have to give up a whole lot. So I wouldn't doubt that the Titans in some form or fashion have made it known to the Redskins, we're not going to go that high, but if you're just trying to get rid of them, we'll take it.
All right, we're talking right now with Willie Donick, 104.5 The Zone in Nashville, Tennessee. Willie, my final four quickies before I let you go, and I'll start with this one. What's the Vols record here in 2010, first year under Coach Dooley?
Well, I think this is going to be the tough one. They do not have a lot on the offensive line. That's going to be the number one problem that they have, a completely inexperienced offensive line and a lot of inexperience at quarterback. They've got limited choices. The choices are a junior college transfer in, I believe it's Matt Sims. It's Phil Sims' son. And the other one is Tyler Bray, a true freshman who has been hit or miss some in the preseason. So they got big question marks there. I'm going to say 6-6 for Tennessee, and that might be a little bit on the high end. You might have some people predicting 5-7.
All right. What's the opinion from Vols fans of the acting performance of Philip Fulmer in The Blind Side?
I would say thumbs up. You know, given the training, given the background, which is zero in acting, I'd say they give him the thumbs up.
How many yards for Chris Johnson in 10?
Chris Johnson, I'm going to say 1650.
That's pretty good follow-up year. A lot of yards last year. Fantasy geeks will be happy to see that. And finally, December 26th, the Tennessee Titans make their way to Arrowhead Stadium in what, in our opinion, is certain doom. Your opinion, who wins, Titans or Chiefs?
Very early, I will say the Titans will win, but Chris Johnson will not play the bongo drums in the end zone.
All right, very good. That's a good start, at least. We'll see how it plays out when they get there. Willie, great stuff. Always appreciate the time. Thanks so much, and we'll catch up with you down the road.
No problem, anytime.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
Real sports fans can tell you all about decibels, that a crowd yelling at 105 decibels is like a jackhammer, 120, a jet engine, that studies directly link team performance to crowd noise. Finally, they'll tell you to go to Ticketmaster, with more ways to get you into the game, including buying and selling seats from season ticket holders and other fans. Because for your voice to be heard, you have to be there. Ticketmaster, more ways in.
Buy and sell Chiefs tickets with Chiefs Ticket Exchange by Ticketmaster at kcchiefs.com.
Welcome to Chiefs Country, where fans like you wear their passion for their team like war paint. It's for you, Chiefs fans, that we created Chiefs Checking, with the official Chiefs debit card and discounts on Chiefs gear all year long.
Visit Metcalf Bank or ChiefsChecking.com, and for a limited time, sign up and score a Chiefs game day cooler.
Chiefs Checking, because you're not just a fan on Sunday.
Only at Metcalf Bank. Strong roots, endless possibilities. Member Central Bank Company, member FDIC. See bank for details.
Hey, Chiefs fans, I'm Josh Looney of KCChiefs.com.
And I am the Internet. I usually don't endorse websites, but KCChiefs.com is legit.
I know. At KCChiefs.com, you can check out my daily blog, exclusive video content, see what's going on with the team. You can also interact with other fans in Chiefs 365, and much more.
I'm so excited. I can barely contain myself.
You want the Chiefs? Go to the Chiefs at KCChiefs.com.
Are you looking for that perfect gift? Maybe it's a birthday, a holiday, or just looking for something special for that extra special Chiefs fan in your life? Well, we have it. The 2010 Chiefs Cheerleader Swimsuit Calendar is now available at kcchiefs.com. This 16-month calendar features the entire Chiefs Cheerleader squad in swimsuits shot in Red Hot Jamaica. Get your hands on the 16-month 2010 Chiefs Cheerleader Swimsuit Calendar online at the Chiefs Pro Shop at kcchiefs.com.
It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angle, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jamal Charles.
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job and we'll win this game. And the Chiefs put the hammer down.
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good! Ryan Suckup wins the game in overtime.
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to kcchiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul. Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on kcchiefs.com.
All right, welcome back. You're in the Red Zone here at kcchiefs.com. Soren Petro with you on a Wednesday. Our thanks to Willie Donick, 104.5 The Zone, in Nashville, Tennessee, covering the Vols as well as the Tennessee Titans, as Willie giving us the breakdown on Eric Berry, also predicting 1,650 yards for the
follow-up season to Chris Johnson's 2000 season. He's got the Titans over the Chiefs. We'll see about that December 26th. The Tennessee Titans come to Kansas City, and we will see if they are indeed able to take care of business against the Chiefs or if the Chiefs are ready to go toe-to-toe with the Tennessee Titans and even more. That is, again, those last two games of the year, home games. So if the Chiefs can be in a spot 8-6 or better, maybe even just 7-7. Last year, 9-7 was good enough for the playoffs. But particularly, I think you got a target being at least 8-6 going into those last two games, and that game against the Tennessee Titans, if you can get it done, would be perhaps one of two games that you would still control your own destiny to get yourself into the playoffs. The Titans on the December 26th, and then January 2nd, the Oakland Raiders, 8-6, the target. That's how you want to get there. You've got at San Diego, at St. Louis, home for Tennessee, home for Oakland. That final quarter of the season, you want to be 8-6 after that Ram game and know that, hey, two home wins at our place and we're a playoff team. That's the spot you want to create for yourself. Maybe that means you've only got to get to 7-6 going into the Rams game if the Rams have their struggles. But we will see. We'll continue to break down that schedule as we progress with the Red Zone. I want to get to some of your emails. Remember, you can always email us, redzone@kcchiefs.org. That is redzone@kcchiefs.org. Our man Daryl Zimmer checking in about a week or so ago, but he put this in one of his emails. Looking at the highlight clips of Dexter McCluster, it looks as though we got Dante Hall back with even more speed than what Dante had. Your comments, Seren. Well, I'll tell you this. I don't know. In a foot race, I'm not sure which one would clock quicker. I think Dexter McCluster's 40 time, at least the 40 time he ran at the combine, would probably not blow you away. I want to say it was in the 4.5 range, a little over 4.5, as a matter of fact. But I think he then ran 4.4 or 4.39 on campus. Let's suffice it to say, he's fast compared to you and me, Daryl. He's pretty fast for the NFL, but I think what makes him even more dangerous and where you see that Dante Hall part of the equation is his ability to stop and start. They're not going to run a 40-yard dash. The speed is an indicator of what you can do on the football field, but you've got to be able to apply the speed. We talked a lot about this, Jerry Rice running a 4.65 when he came out of college and went on to be the greatest wide receiver, maybe the greatest football player ever to play. It's the ability to use your speed. Can you maintain that speed with the pads, and can you stop and start? And I think that's what McCluster does. And after seeing him work a little bit in the mini camps, they've had him taking handoffs, catching the football underneath. He is going to be a weapon that they've got to apply. He's got great football skills. His change of direction is big. I mean, I've said it this way many times. You got to be able to make somebody. You got to be able to beat somebody in a phone booth. Whether that's you go Jerome Bettis and run over the top of him, or you go Dante Hall and they just can't put their hands on you and you beat him that way, one way or another, you've got to be able to beat a guy in a phone booth. For most guys, it's part Jerome Bettis, part Dante Hall. Dexter McCluster is going to be more Dante Hall, a lot more Dante Hall than Jerome Bettis, and we'll see. It's now on the shoulders of Charlie Weiss to find ways to get him the football and make him more than just a decoy or a special package of plays. If he can return kicks the way Dante Hall did, I think he'll take it. That's good enough if you can get that out of him. Let's get to another email. Again, you can always email us, redzone@kcchiefs.org. This one from Philip. Let's see. Greetings, Seren. I've heard numerous times that the Chiefs had Eric Berry as the number one player on their board all along. I'm sorry, but what do you mean to tell me that Ndamukong Suh was not at the top of their board? I don't get that. Can you elaborate? I have no problem with the Berry pick. In fact, I was surprised to see them take the quote-unquote sexy pick, but I still believe that Suh should have been at the top of their board. Phil in Wichita. Phil, let me say this. Number one, nobody, as far as I know, from the Chiefs organization has said he was number one on their board. And I might be wrong on that. I might have missed it, because that to me, if they did say it, is, you know, kind of like, well, just borderline meaningless. Who cares? He was number one on their board when they picked fifth, and that's why they took him. The boards, I think, are interesting. And I think if you're a football team, if you're the Chiefs and that's your board, if that is the case, and I don't remember him saying that, and even if they did, a lot of teams will say that, just that's what you want to say. I mean, you want to, you know, instill. That's the PR game of instilling your fans with confidence that we got the guy. We got the best guy. So what if he was the fifth, number five guy to go in this draft? He was our number one guy. You want to build the enthusiasm for your fan base. That doesn't strike me as Scott Pioli, and I'd be surprised if that comment came from him. I've heard people say the Chiefs had that. Now, what's their source? I don't know. Maybe they do have a source. And maybe he was. And you keep that board and you evaluate it so that 4 or 5 years from now, when you can really look at what all these football players have become, you can go back and say, okay, where did we miss? Why did this guy down here in the third round, who's been a four-time Pro Bowler, why did we have him ranked so low? But he went on to be a stud. Or, you know, the guy that's going to stand out is the kid from Cal, who the Jaguars took at 10 or 11, the defensive end, defensive tackle from Cal. Nobody had him going that high. But if he goes on to be a Pro Bowl player, everybody, if their boards were like Mel Kiper's and Todd McShay, and they had him listed as a second rounder, then they're going to have to go evaluate, all right, what did we miss on this guy? Because he's a stud. Likewise, if he tanks and just ends up being a ho-hum player, and you had him listed as a second or third rounder on your board or 50th or 60th on your board, then you look at it and go, okay, we evaluated him correctly. I think you keep your draft board. You don't just wad it up and throw away, because those who don't study history are doomed to repeat it. The history here is draft mistakes. If indeed Eric Berry was your number one player on your board and Ndamukong Suh goes on to be Reggie White, well, you didn't lose anything because you didn't have an opportunity to get Ndamukong Suh with your draft pick. But you need to understand, all right, how did we miss on this guy? Wow, that was a dominant force. And if he would go on to be a Reggie White caliber defensive lineman, you need to understand that if you had Eric Berry number one, that your rankings were wrong unless Eric Berry would go on to become the greatest safety of all times, 10 picks a year. We talked about how many interceptions, really. You know, Ed Reed's never even had 10 interceptions in a season. But let's say Eric Berry revolutionizes the safety position, then okay, then your board was correct. But if Eric Berry goes on to be Ed Reed, and Ndamukong Suh goes on to be Reggie White, then your draft board was probably in the wrong order. And you might want to consider, hey, should we have traded up? Should we have put more ammo into moving up and getting a Reggie White caliber football player? We didn't do it, but in the future, we're not going to make that mistake. Here's what we didn't factor in on Ndamukong Suh. Ndamukong Suh was number one on my board. I think he was probably number one on a lot of people's board. Chiefs didn't pick till five, and at number five, Eric Berry was tops on their board. I think most people had Eric Berry higher than fifth, whether or not he was number one, two, three, four. He is a Chief, and now they got to make best use of him to make it fit in. Let's talk offensive line. We're going to talk with one of the newest, now current, and was at one time a former Kansas City Chief. Casey Wiegman joins us next here in the Red Zone.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com. It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angle, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jamal Charles.
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job and we'll win this game. And the Chiefs put the hammer down.
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good! Ryan Suckup wins the game in overtime.
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to kcchiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul.
Every Sunday, a city of more than 2 million unites. A community of fans thousands strong anticipates. A team of 53 players charges the field.
It's a sweep left to the fullback, and a great block springs up to the outside. He's up the left sideline.
And one grocery store is proud to support them all.
20. He's going to outrace everyone to the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs. A Kansas City Chiefs fan, they'll tailgate just about anywhere. And they live to hear the three most important words ever.
Tailgate Kansas City!
With Hy-Vee's weekly tailgate specials, you'll find everything you need for your next Chiefs tailgate or Chiefs party. Stop into Hy-Vee and stock up with new tailgate specials every week.
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Real sports fans can tell you all about decibels. That a crowd yelling at 105 decibels is like a jackhammer. 120, a jet engine. That studies directly link team performance to crowd noise. Finally, They'll tell you to go to Ticketmaster, with more ways to get you into the game, including buying and selling seats from season ticket holders and other fans. Because for your voice to be heard, you have to be there. Ticketmaster. More ways in.
Buy and sell Chiefs tickets with Chiefs Ticket Exchange by Ticketmaster at kcchiefs.com.
Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on kcchiefs.com.
Welcome back. You're in the Red Zone here at kcchiefs.com. Soren Petro with you on a Wednesday. That is when we're live. We can see your thoughts, comments, questions here in the chat room, and we're going to talk with once former center for the Kansas City Chiefs, now current center for the Kansas City Chiefs, Casey Wiegman, is with us. Casey, how are you, man?
I'm doing great.
It is good to be talking to you again. I know many a Chiefs fan was disappointed when you left town and went to someplace else. I don't remember where it was. Someplace that just, you know, doesn't even exist as far as most of us Chiefs fans are concerned. But very happy to have you back. What was the reason why Kansas City was the perfect spot again for you?
I just felt coming back home was going to be the good fit. I mean, my wife and family were going to make home Kansas City, so it come back and play here another year and see what happens, and then hopefully get the Chiefs back onto the right track.
Is Kansas City, I think it is, as a town, one of the best-kept secrets in this country. It's such a great place to live and certainly to raise a family. Is it known as that around the NFL, or only is it a little secret amongst just the players that have played for the Chiefs?
Yeah, I think it's a little secret right now. I'm going to try to keep it that way, too. I want to keep this town, this city, the way it has been in the past. I mean, we don't want anybody coming in and ruin it. But I love Kansas City the first time I was here, and I'm just happy to be back.
Was that your plan even before you made it back to Kansas City, that KC would be your permanent long-term home?
Yeah, we were going to make it home. I mean, my family's still up in Iowa. It takes me 4 hours and 15 minutes to get back to see them, and my wife's family's from Tonganoxie, so this is going to be home.
Yeah, now let's go back to, you talk about being from Iowa originally, 1996, your first year in the league. Did you think in 1996 there was any chance you'd be talking about where you're playing professional football in 2010?
No way. I mean, coming off a broken foot in my last game in college and being an undrafted free agent in my first year and then being on the practice squad, it was a long road to get to where I'm at, and I never dreamt of playing going into my 15th year now. It's just hard to imagine.
Were you told you'd have a shot? Did you feel confident you'd play in the league for some amount of time, not for 15 years? Or did you think it was a long shot for you to even play in the league?
Well, I knew coming out that it was a good opportunity to make it. I just didn't know if my foot would be able to hold up because doctors had told me that it was probably going to be limited, if at all, and I just didn't think it'd be very long, and it just keeps plugging away, and my body's holding up, so that's all that matters.
And what is the key to still playing football 15 years down the road?
Oh, I don't know. I try to take care of the body as much as possible, but I just had a good string of good luck, and I know someone's looking out for me on the other end.
Yeah, but you know, you say that, that you've had a string of good luck, and you kind of passively go by and say, I just try to take care of my body. Look, I've been in the locker room after a practice, before a meeting where you've still got work to be done as far as the mental part of the game of the football, but the practice part is done, the physical part is done. I know there weren't any more weightlifting sessions set, and everybody's kind of milling around, getting ready to head off to the meetings or doing a couple interviews with media guys like myself. You're over in front of your locker doing sit-ups. I mean, that's clearly a dedication to your body more than just kind of the way you just passed it off. You spend a lot of time on being physically ready to play the game, do you not?
I do. I mean, I got a wife that works out all the time, too, so she's keeping me going to the gym in the off-season, and I got a son that runs around and does everything, so I gotta stay fit that way. But yeah, with the sit-ups in the locker room, we did that when I was in Kansas City the first time. Just a couple of us guys did it and just try to keep each other going. And as an offensive line, that's what we always do. So, I mean, other than that, I mean, I just do what most people do, just go to the gym and work out and get on the treadmill and ellipticals and stuff like that, nothing major.
Now, you're listed at 6 feet two and 285 pounds, and as I said, you're in pretty good shape at that 285 pounds as well. There aren't many places in the world that a guy who weighs 285 would be considered small. The NFL, playing center, is one of those spots. Do you consider yourself small?
With some of the guys coming in the league, there's definitely a reason for to be calling me small, because some of these guys are monsters coming out. And I mean, when you get in the huddle with some of these guys, you feel like a midget out there, and it's amazing that I can even say I've played this long, because I mean, guys are getting stronger and faster. And what keeps me in the game is just having a football intelligence that just keeps me going.
It's intelligence, it's technique, understanding leverage. Was that something you always had going back to your high school and college days, or is it something you acquired to make it work in the NFL?
No, I think I've always had it. Just brought up with a high school coach. I knew what he was teaching in offensive line play, and then I had a couple great offensive line coaches at Iowa, and it just seemed to snowball from there. And then I've been blessed to play with a number of good offensive line coaches in the league to teach you different stuff. So, I mean, I've had some good coaching along the way, but my body style fits offensive line play too, with short legs and being a little bit shorter.
And I know, I'm sure you're aware that last year, and I assume it'll be the same, that there's a conditioning test that everybody on the team has to pass since Todd Haley came on as the head coach?
Oh, yeah. We know about it. I knew about it last year just from following the Chiefs a little bit. But we did the same exact thing in Denver. And, I mean, it's not a big deal. You got to get out there and do it. And nothing to it. You just got to go out and do it and pass it. That's all.
And is it something that you practice a few times, make sure you're clocking under the time you need to be at?
Oh, yeah. We've been trying to practice them a little bit just on Fridays here with the new strength coach. So, I mean, we're getting it down. Everybody's doing a good job. The offseason's going great, and guys are working hard.
Do you think that's important? I mean, a lot of people would say, okay, that sounds great in theory for every position but the offensive line, maybe defensive tackles as well. Hey, those are supposed to be guys that are big, and, you know, strength is more important than speed and quickness. I mean, as a guy who quickness and getting into, you know, into a guy's pads and into his body and using that leverage is important, do you think that this is, you know, very important, and that maybe it's one of the things that can give this football team an edge?
Oh, yeah, no question about it. Conditioning is a huge part. I mean, that's also what's kept me in the league, is I try to keep myself in tip-top conditioning. And just constantly through the 60 minutes of the course of the game, you just kind of hopefully wear down your opponent a little bit just by keep coming at them. And, I mean, it's a long process. I mean, we're going through the stuff right now in the off-season program, but it doesn't stop there. We got to do stuff our month off in the month of July where we're away from the strength and conditioning program. And that's when I spend my time with my best friend who plays for the Lions. We work out harder than we probably do right now.
Could Willie Rofe pass this test?
As of right now, I don't know. Yeah. In the past, he could have easily, just by how gifted of an athlete he was.
We're talking to Casey Wiegman, Chiefs center here in the red zone. Casey, one of the guys on your offensive line, one of the other signings for the Chiefs, one of the additions, a guy with Kansas City ties, went to Shawnee Mission Northwest and Kansas State, Ryan Lilja, another guy. I know we talked to him a couple of weeks ago. He discussed technique and a lot of the similar things and pointed to you as a guy that he learned a lot from. You know, do you guys share undersized offensive lineman tips back and forth?
Oh, yeah, you have to. I mean, we were just talking about in the weight room this morning about going against the bigger behemoths and the defensive lines around the league. And, I mean, the things you got to do, you got to pull out. You got to try everything at least once, and hopefully it works for you one time. Otherwise, you don't use it again. But, yeah, I mean, being undersized both of us, I mean, we kind of take it to heart, and that means we just got to work a little bit harder.
Now, how important is, you know, we've got a couple of you coming in, Ryan coming in. How important is continuity to the overall success of an offensive line? You obviously had great continuity your first tenure here. How important is that continuity for the offensive line reaching its full potential?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, you said it when we were in, like, 2003 when we had everything rolling, the offensive line was the main ingredient through the whole thing because, I mean, just – we blended together so well, just different personalities, the guys with different techniques and different abilities, and it was just amazing. We just came together as one, and hopefully we can do that here in 2010 because they definitely have the talent here. The guys are working hard, and I really like what I see so far.
With Will Shields and Brian Waters on each side of you and Ryan Lilja being lost, is that just part of the game? Is that what you just go, well, you know what happens when you've got great football players in front of a talented young player? Or is that something you look back on and go, organizations just can't miss when they get a Ryan Lilja here?
It's just part of the game. I mean, things like that happen. It's just, I mean, you can go around the league. Everybody can say the same exact thing, that they let a guy slip through. But I'm happy for Ryan what he did. I mean, he's made it 2 Super Bowls and won one, and I mean, you can't be happier for the kid than for being undrafted and just showing people what he could do.
How about the schedule for the regular season? When do you start thinking about the San Diego Chargers?
Going into the San Diego week, that's about it. I mean, we got to go through training camp first and all our OTAs and stuff like that. So we got a long process before we get to that first game, and hopefully everything will work itself out then.
When the schedule comes out, you don't sit down and go, all right, WL. You don't sit or tough game, should be pretty good there, tough game. You don't go through it week by week?
No, I don't. It's just the league changes so much. I mean, there's so many of the trades that could still be made, and, I mean, all the off-season pickups, and, I mean, even with the Jets, with them picking up a bunch of players. I mean, everything changes so much, you don't know what a team is going to be like going into the year.
No. Do you stay in touch with your teammates from not just the Broncos, but from the Bears, all the guys you played with before? You still got a nice little network of pals around the league?
Oh, yeah, there's no question. I got a few guys in Chicago yet, and just saw Trent a couple weeks ago when I came back into town. And, I mean, there's plenty of guys I can still call and go meet up with. But we've just been busy moving back and getting comfortable with this new system here in Kansas City.
Do you have a timetable on how much longer you'd like to play?
I told myself I'd be done a long time ago. So every year is a blessing to me. And I just want to keep going. My body feels great, and I'm just happy to be where I'm at right now.
We're talking to Casey Wiegman. Casey, before I let you go, our final four quickies. Are you ready?
You bet.
All right. Are you happy to be headed to St. Joe instead of River Falls for training camp?
I believe so. I mean, it's going to be a good change. Be good for the fans to get up there. Maybe it'll get us to go through training camp in a little bit happier mood. On our day off, we can get back here and see families and stuff.
Yeah, that's where I think it would be better for the players, is a chance to be closer to your families. I mean, do you plan on being able to see the family on a regular basis up there?
Yeah, I hope so. We've already been talking about it a little bit because we got a little 2.5-year-old, and I know my wife wants to bring him up there and get him comfortable with being around football and stuff. So, I mean, there's no question that family's going to be coming up to visit.
All right, do you change diapers?
I change diapers. There's no question about it.
Good man, good man. I figured as much. You know, an offensive lineman's the type of guy to get in the trenches and not be afraid to get a little bit dirty, so we expect that from you. Maybe a glory boy, what are you supposed to, quarterbacks, wideouts, they don't change diapers?
I don't know. I've been getting on Castle a little bit. He's going to have a little one here pretty soon, so I told him he's got to make sure to change those diapers.
All right, very good. Are you for expansion of the Big Ten, or you like where it's at?
I like where it's at right now. Having Missouri or Nebraska come in would be great, but I know from years past that Iowa had a 2-year contract with Missouri, and they backed out of it because they were scared to play Iowa. So yeah. I'd rather have the Big Ten be where it's at right now.
Yeah, you don't want any chickens in the league, right?
That's exactly right.
Understood. Finally, you answer this however you want. The Chiefs' record at the end of 2010 is what?
It will be better than what it was last year, I know that. I mean, I watched them through the second half of the season last year, and they made a gradual slide moving forward, and that's part of the reason why I came back here. I know where they're going, and that's the right direction.
Yeah, we all certainly hope so, and I like the schedule. I think it looks pretty good, and hopefully it ends up bearing fruit for this football team. We know one thing, we're very happy to have you back in town, Casey. Thanks so much for the time, and look forward to talking to you down the road.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com. It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angle, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jamal Charles.
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job, and we'll win this game. And the Chiefs put the hammer down.
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this This kick is good! Ryan Suckup wins the game in overtime.
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to kcchiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul.
In today's hectic world, it's hard enough to find time to manage all your commitments and still find time to pursue a higher education. But at Columbia College, we make it easier. Classes are just 8 weeks long, and you can earn your associate, bachelor's, or master's degree on campus, online, or both. Apply now to Columbia College in Kansas City at www.ccis.edu/about-time. That's www.ccis.edu/about-time.
Hey, Chiefs fans. I'm Josh Looney of KCChiefs.com.
And I am the Internet. Great to be here, Josh.
We're here to tell you about all the new and exciting things going on at KCChiefs.com.
I usually don't endorse websites, but KCChiefs.com is legit.
I know. At KCChiefs.com, you can check out my daily blog, exclusive video content, see what's going on with the team, learn about the Chiefs cheerleaders, and much more.
Yeah, buddy.
That's not all. You can also interact with other fans in Chiefs 365. Chiefs 365 is the place for Chiefs fans to interact, give feedback, and be connected with everything Chiefs.
Fan feedback? That is awesome. But Josh, I really want to buy a jersey.
At KCChiefs.com, you can do that too. The Chiefs Pro Shop is the best place on the web. Buy all of your favorite Chiefs gear, gifts, and much more.
Whoa, system overload.
You want the Chiefs? Go to the Chiefs at KCChiefs.com.
Are you looking for that perfect gift? Maybe it's a birthday, a holiday, or just looking for something special for that extra special Chiefs fan in your life? Well, we have it. The 2010 Chiefs Cheerleader Swimsuit Calendar is now available at KCChiefs.com. This 16-month calendar features the entire Chiefs cheerleader squad in swimsuits shot in red-hot Jamaica. Get your hands on the 16-month 2010 Chiefs Cheerleader Swimsuit Calendar online at the Chiefs Pro Shop at kcchiefs.com.
Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on kcchiefs.com.
All right, wrapping things up here in the Red Zone at kcchiefs.com. Soren Petro with you. Our thanks to Casey Wiegman, one of the good guys in the NFL. Good to have him back in the red and gold, and now competition at that center spot between he and Rudy Neiswanger. And I'll tell you the other thing he brings to the equation, in addition to just competing at the center spot, is he brings another coach on the field. 15 years in the National Football League for Casey Wiegman. John Asamoah, who is going to be listed as a guard and center as he took snaps, gave the snaps at Illinois in practice. He was the emergency backup center for the Illini. So the Chiefs kind of looking at him, since they mentioned it a couple times. Well, he also took snaps. They've made a point to showcase the fact that he did snap the football at Illinois. Has you thinking in the back of your mind, they're thinking of him as a guard and a center, and who better than a guy who for 15 years has been getting it done with intelligence and technique, because he is undersized. Take a guy who's not undersized and John Asamoah out of Illinois and teach him that technique, leverage, the smarts that Casey Wiegman brings to the equation, and you theoretically would then have an even better center. Casey Wiegman back in the mix, and good news for the Kansas City Chiefs, and it'll be a lot of fun to see how that battle plays out once we get to St. Joe for training camp. 888-99-CHIEFS, that's 888-CHIEFS is how you get your season tickets. Get your tickets right now. The schedule is, I think, an outstanding one, and one gives the Chiefs a very good shot at the playoffs. I think this team is going to be very disappointed if they're not 8-8 and should be fighting towards 10-6. As Mitch Holthus has said it a couple of times, the voice of the Chiefs, meaningful games in December. That's the goal for this football team, and to me, that's a successful season, is you want 16 games to count in the standings. Go into that last game with something to play for, and you've had a successful season. That's how I view it. Other people say it's playoffs or bust. Other people say it's Super Bowl or bust. I want 16 meaningful regular season games. I think we got a great shot of seeing that this year. Only time will tell. You can get your tickets, 888-99-CHIEFS. That's going to do it for us here in the Red Zone. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week in the Red Zone.
You've been listening to The Red Zone with Soren Petro. Join us again next week for more discussion of your Kansas City Chiefs. This has been an exclusive presentation of KCChiefs.com.